Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host, Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, welcome in, folks. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. It's a beautiful day because we are 2 days away from NFL football. We're 5 days away from the start of the Jaguars season on Sunday at home in Everbank. And I'm fired up, Loggy. You know what? I'm bathing in the Kool-Aid. I'm ready to go. I mean, Blake Bortles has me excited with his play. Fat Tony wrote a big piece on Blake Bortles on his Facebook page, the Fat Tony Show Facebook page, which folks can link to off Jaguars Today and go like that page as well. I'm believing that this guy is going to be the answer at quarterback. Maybe not this year, you know, for the consistency level that you're going to want. And I think that's the thing that may be missing this year. I think you're going to see some of those peak performances. The question is, can he do it week in, week out?
I don't question the consistency part of it. You know, that's the one thing. Now, at the level of consistency, what would it be? I think that's the question that I think that you got to put out there. But I think when you question consistency, it's more of a thing as you're questioning the individual's preparation and ability to.
I'm not questioning that.
No, I'm not saying that.
I'm talking about game day performance.
But I think that, you know, I believe, you know, because if you watch the way that he performed in the preseason and three games that he played in, was there any fluctuation in play that we saw out of those three games? No. Was there any fluctuation in what we saw throughout training camp and OTAs where we said, boy, he didn't have a good day. That was a bad day. No. We saw good days, we saw better days, but everything for the most part was consistently good. Now, I think that once he gets to the season, I believe that he's going to be consistently good because I think the offensive line play is going to be better. I think he allows the offensive line to be better because he's got exceptional pocket presence. But now I don't know what level he's going to be able to perform at consistently. But I think that he will be consistent for this football team. He's going to give this team a chance to be right around 500. And 500 is okay with me for a quarterback in his second year beating a starter in the National Football League. And there's a lot of people out there that are saying, the quarterback is great. We're going to the playoffs. Well, whoa, wait a minute. The quarterback is developing, and he is showing that he is good. But the team still has to develop with him. And I still think there are limitations around him that still have to be improved to allow this team to take the next step. And defensively, I think that there are questions about this defense to allow them to take the next step.
Oh, we certainly saw them in the preseason. You know, questions, will there be a pass rush? They gave up some big plays deep down the field. Now, again, just like defenses are not game planning against Blake Bortles and company in the preseason, Jags defense is not specifically game planning for opposing offenses. And I don't know if you'll get the best test of a passing game coming in here. Greg Olsen, you would figure, is going to be a busy man on Sunday if Carolina knows what they're doing. And I suspect that they're going to try to come in here and maybe take some shots downfield to guys like Ted Ginn, hit Olsen, live with him underneath, run the heck out of the football and try to play good defense, which has been their mantra over the last few years.
Yeah, and how good can they be on defense? I mean, they've got some key components that have been hurt in the preseason. The one consistent factor for the Carolina Panthers, they have the best linebacker in football right now.
Luke Kuechly.
He's a fantastic player. Watching him play in the preseason is special. I mean, it's not very often that you have a special player that you watch in the preseason. He plays preseason games like they're playoff football. He's that good. He's tremendous. I can't wait to watch him. I can't wait to watch Wisniewski and Beatles and Linder block that guy because he is
hopefully
special.
Block that guy.
Yes.
You talk about, you know, Blake Bortles and his development from year one to year two, and I think a lot of fans are excited because of what they've seen in the preseason. Obviously, he's been great in this preseason, and he hasn't had all his weapons around him yet. Marquise Lee, Julius Thomas, probably not going to be there for week one. Julius a lot later than that, but Marquise, we'll see if he's healthy enough to get back on the field this week or not. Last year, it didn't feel like he was good enough in those two or three games where they had opportunities to win to carry them to those kind of victories. When you're watching how much he's developed in this offseason, do you get the sense that when they're in a game like they were against Pittsburgh or in that game like they were against Miami, that Blake has improved enough that those losses become wins for this football team?
I think so, because when you go back and you look at certain games last year, playing and play out, Blake had periods that was just, you're like, you know, why can't you make that throw?
Right.
You know, I'm not trying to say that I could do it, but I mean, quarterbacks should be able to make that throw. But when it came to critical points like the game at Tennessee, and it's, you know, two-minute drill, whether it be before the half like against the Giants or two-minute drill against the Tennessee Titans, he has a unique ability to raise his level of play at a critical moment. And if you just evaluated just the critical moments by Blake Bortles last year, you would say, yeah, okay. But what happened before that was just eh. And I think now we're starting to see the middling part of the book go, yeah. And if he can still have that, yeah, and then the, oh, at the 2 minute in the critical junctures, he can be good. He can be really good.
All right, we got to take a quick timeout, guys. We're at the end of the first segment here, but we'll open up the phone lines for folks who want to get on board today at 641-1010. It's game week. Week one of the NFL season is finally here. We talk about it all year long. We're excited about the Jags hosting the Panthers this Sunday. We know you are as well. Today, the Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships asks you simply this: who will the Jaguars' defensive MVP be in 2015? You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56. You can also post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. 641-1010 doubles not only as the call-in line, but as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as well. We'll hear from Gus Bradley, yesterday's press conference, and a lot more, and hopefully take your calls and your thoughts, predictions, whatever question you have for Jeff Logan on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Today is the day to bring those to the table. Again, Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. We're ready to kick this thing off. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Logman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I don't think he'll be ready for week one. We're, you know, he's got some testing to do with Milo in terms of return to play. I don't want to put we think he's going to be ready before week six. And so once he starts to practice, I think we'll have a better idea.
That's Jaguar General Manager Dave Caldwell over the weekend on a conference call discussing the availability early season of Cedric Marks. Doesn't look like it'll be this week, Logs. You know, it could have gone either way, I think, on this one.
You know, I still stick to kind of what I said, that I don't think he's going to be available probably till week five or week six. Yeah, but I don't think that, I mean, in a perfect world, you'd like to go ahead and put them on the designated IR. But the problem with that is that once a player goes on that, they can't rehab at practice. So they can't do football things to get back, you know, which would hamper his development and his rehabilitation from an ACL reconstruction. So I don't think people should get their hopes up that he's, you know, by not putting him on that, that they think that he can be available, you know, like PUP or designated IR. Well, you know, that means he's going to play sometime before week six. No, that's not the case. I think that this is the best way that they can get their best defensive player available at some point this season to allow him the best opportunity at rehabilitation. So I still say this, that I expect Cedric to be available week five, week six, or week seven. And I think that that is a lot of people say, well, your expectations aren't very high. Well, look, you're talking about a 300-pound man that had his knee reconstructed in the early part of January.
Right.
That's a lot to ask. So I've got a lot of patience with Cedric in this. I've been through an ACL reconstruction. It's a very difficult rehab. Sometimes it takes longer than others. You know, the Adrian Petersons of the world aren't like normal folks. I mean, it just takes time. Sometimes 10 months is usually the opportunity to be available.
And oftentimes you're not close to being the same guy until the following season. You know, I think it's a good chance we see to send Cedric Marks out there and say, this isn't the guy that we were used to in 2014.
I'm trying to think of the name of the defensive
Geno
tackle,
Atkins.
Geno Atkins in Cincinnati. And Geno Atkins played last year, and he didn't look like the Geno Atkins of old. I mean, Geno Atkins, prior to the ACL, was an absolute
one of the two or three best in the
offensive
league.
Line wrecker.
Yes.
I mean, arguably the best pass rushing defensive tackle in the National Football League. And last year was only a part of himself. Now this year, all the reports out of Cincinnati is that Geno Atkins is back.
He looks like his old self.
When you come back from an ACL, average people, average athletes, I don't say average people, because none of these athletes are average people, but the average athlete, typically it takes 10 months to be able to return to play. 9.5 to 10 months to return to play, and it takes them the second year to be back to be at the level that they were prior to that. Now, look, if Sendarek Marks gets back and is able to perform at 90% or 85% of the level that he was at last year, that's okay. I mean, that's okay. That's good enough for this team to help them this year. But I don't have the expectation that Sendarek will return to his old form until next year. Now, I hope that he returns to a good enough form that he can be a positive contributor for this defense this year. That's my expectation.
All right, if you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the number. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jags cut down, like every other team, to 53 this weekend. They saw some of their players snatched up. Austin Pastor went to Cleveland. Stephen Morris got picked up by Philadelphia. But here in Jacksonville, among the guys that didn't make the cut, who surprised you the most? What stood out to you?
Well, first let me say this. How many years has it been that we've seen teams pick up on the waiver wire at the 53 cut, teams pick up players that the Jaguars have cut?
Not too often recently.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Been a long time. So, I mean, that's a positive sign that other teams around the league think that this roster has improved because the discards have value to where they are helping other rosters. The one that I was surprised at was Jeremiah George, who got picked up by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I believe it was. They kept John Lotulelei. They kept Thurston Armbrister, the rookie undrafted linebacker from Miami. I thought that Jeremiah George was the leading tackler in preseason, played a lot. I thought he was a natural middle linebacker. I think he's the best option if you have an injury at playing that Mike spot with Paul Posluszny if he gets hurt. And I thought that they would keep him. And I thought that the subtraction should have been at running back. I thought Bernard Pierce was a guy that's going to be very difficult maybe to have active on game day. But now that, you know, you don't have that sixth linebacker, probably not having a difficult time getting him active on game day. But other than that, I thought most of them were predictable. Pazdor did not surprise me. We said this, what was it, last week or 2 weeks? 2 weeks ago. We were talking about the most valuable backup, and I threw out there Josh Wells.
Correct.
Because it's not very often that you can find a swing tackle. Now, Sam Young, and I give him credit because when the Jaguars acquired him a couple years ago, he wasn't great. I mean, he was a developing player. And everybody develops at different timelines. Last year, I thought Sam Young was the best right tackle on this roster. And I said it last year, don't be surprised if Sam Young is a starting right tackle on opening day. It didn't happen. Eventually it did. And they ended up kind of stabilizing once he got in the lineup a little bit at right tackle. But Sam Young proved this year that he is the best option at swing tackle. Congratulations to him because he's worked incredibly hard over the last couple years. I love watching the way that he practices. I love watching him in pregame because he's focused, he's a pro, and he's a smart guy. And he gives them the best option on game days of swing tackle.
Nick Marshall makes the team one of five cornerbacks that made the cut. Obviously, Aaron Colvin, Devon House, Demetrius McCray, and Dwayne Grotz all expected to be there. Some talk about whether or not Marshall would make it. Did they feel like they could sneak him to the practice squad? Would he get claimed? Was it a case that they couldn't let that athleticism out there for somebody else to take? Or do they think that Nick Marshall can help this football team this year?
I think both. But, you know, you talk about how great of an athlete he is. But this defense last year had six interceptions. Six. It's not a good number. And Nick Marshall might have the best ball skills of any of the defensive backs right now. And the rest of it will come along. But this secondary is desperate for playmakers. Playmakers that touch the ball and keep it and hold on to it. And Nick Marshall, I think, at some point can develop into a regular in the lineup. Now, I don't know what regular on the lineup role means. I don't know if it's a starter. I think eventually, me and you had talked about it back in training camp, maybe the move to safety would fit him well and be able to take advantage of the ball skills that he has. But he's just too good of a ball skills player to let go on a defense that just desperately needs takeaways right now.
Ziggy Hood suffered the plantar fasciitis in the final preseason game. He goes on injured reserve. Had he not gotten injured, did he have a place on this roster? There's been some talk that based on, you know, what he made, what he gives to the team, maybe he wouldn't. Was this something that made it an easy decision for him? How do you look at that?
I think he was unfortunate to get hurt, but fortunate to get hurt. I think that Michael Bennett in the last two preseason games, a sixth-round pick out of Ohio State, got dramatically better. And the thing that impressed me the most was that his conditioning level improved throughout the preseason to where you never saw the difference in his plays in the end of the fourth quarter versus the beginning of the fourth quarter, which is, you know, second half is where he was getting the most of his snaps. But if you compared Ziggy Hood and Michael Bennett, they were about even production-wise. And when you're even production-wise and one of them's a draft pick who's a young player and a six-round pick and the other one is an established veteran making, you know, probably averaging about $4 million in a year considering the amortization and his paragraph 5 salary, that's an easy decision to make. You take the player who is young, has more upside, and has a chance to improve as the years go on.
A lot of moving parts on that defensive line to get things started this season, looking at that 53-man roster. We talked about Cindric Marks at the top of this segment here, but what would your plan be going into week one against Carolina? I know you've talked about Odrick a little bit at that three technique, starting Aluwalu at times. What would your plan be on that defensive line there? And the Leo is a bit of a mess right now for this team.
I think at the three technique, I think first and second down, that's going to be Tyson Aluwalu. Otherwise, they would have had Odrick getting snaps. Now, personally, I would have gotten Odrick snaps at the three technique already. I know that Avery Jones is capable of doing that, but Odrick, I think there's a comfort level because he did it in Miami for a period of time. It would have been better off.
Happy birthday, Avery, by the way.
Yeah. And by the way, he had a tremendous game against Washington. He played like the entire game, played it at a high level, looked dominant as you should. If you're a 53-man roster guy against backups, against Washington Redskins, he had a tremendous night in Washington. But the Leo position is a huge question mark. Are they going to start Chris Smith? You know, on first and second down, allow Chris Clemens to still be a situational pass rusher, you know, which is great for Clem. You know, it's going to allow him to be fresh and rush the passer, which probably would benefit this defense the most. But what are you going to get on first and second down with Chris Smith? You know, I mean, what did we see out of him? You know, was he extremely productive? Did he shine? Did he flash against Washington? He had one pass rush to where he kind of had a power move. But the defensive end from the other side, I can't remember if it was Cappy.
Yeah, it was.
That kind of forced the quarterback up and allowed
Chris
Smith to power rush him. No, it was a good rush by Chris.
Yeah.
But besides that play, did you see him flash?
Not particularly in that game.
No, I mean, that was disappointing.
You described him as kind of a cleanup guy, right?
Well, I always said this about him. I think he's a misfit in this defense. You know, Leos are supposed to be agile, fast, quick. Chris is more of a true 4-3 left defensive end, whereas in this defense, a left defensive end is playing, you know, a 4-eye, which is head up on the tackle and kind of eating up space and eating up blockers and being a really powerful point of contact. And that's not Chris, but if he were a left end and a true 4-3 where the left end is playing sometimes in a wide 6, sometimes a 5 outside shade of the offensive tackle, that probably would suit him better. So I'm just kind of on Chris Smith. You know, I would hope that they can get, you know, Andre Branch back at some point. You know, I'm not super high on Andre Branch. I think he still plays the game very high and doesn't play the game with a lot of power, but he plays the game with great energy and he's got great speed.
Does this team need to, and will they, in your opinion, send more pressure? Will they look to create pressure by using more than just the down four linemen?
That's just not the way that they would like to do it.
Right. They wouldn't like to do it that way, but if you're not getting there, I mean, and we don't know. They haven't played a game yet that counts, but
well, if you do that, you know, if you fortify your pass rush by sending an extra guy, because rarely do they send six. Most of the time they're sending five when we talk about sending extra guys.
Right.
You're making your coverage delinquent. Are they good enough in the back end to where they can have a coverage that's delinquent? Maybe. But have we seen enough in the preseason that makes you feel confident that if we send five, we're okay in coverage? Not yet.
I guess my question would be, though, are they good enough in coverage if it's taken forever to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands to force him? You know, I don't know if any secondary is good enough if you don't get pressure up front.
No, not on a five-man. You know, so to me, I think that they're going to dib and dab. In other words, a little bit here,
a
little bit there. But it's all of a sudden, they're not going to say, hey, look, we don't feel good about our four-man, because their four-man package, that's what they expect. Four-man pressure, seven-man in coverage. I think they'll start out with four-man, and if all of a sudden it gets to a critical moment in the game or a critical down and distance, they may. But for the most part, this defense is built on a four-man rush.
Any addition to the snaps that you'd see Ryan Davis at that Leo, and what about Scuda, who's been tried on that defensive line?
Yeah,
too?
See, I mean, Scuda to me is an auto, you know, at best. You know, I'm just kind of lukewarm on him. Look, I love the fact that he gets the most out of his ability. I think he can give you some snaps there as a sub rusher or a nickel pass rusher, but not on first and second down. That's not Dan Scuda. I think the best option, the best Leo for the starting lineup would be Ryan Davis. I think that they should be playing Ryan Davis more. I've been saying that for 2 years. I love Ryan Davis. I think he's athletic. I think he's strong. Is he a great Leo? No, but he's better than everything else you got right now.
641-1010, the phone number. Will open it up to you for the first time right now as we welcome you in on Jaguars today. Seth gets first crack at it. Seth, you're on with Jeff Logman. Go ahead.
Yeah, I heard you guys talking about Sendarek and his ACL injury, and I just wanted to comment, coming from a guy who's actually experienced the same injury. I had it repaired by Dr. Heekin here in Jacksonville. Great job. Thanks, Dr. Heekin. But anyway, man, you know, after the first year of coming off of this injury, it wasn't so much that I didn't feel my leg could take it. It was in my mind. And the ACL is a very mental injury, and I believe that not that it's really going to affect him that much, because, yes, he's a strong player in the NFL for a reason, but I do believe he's not going to be 100% for another year and a half, 2 years. I mean, this is a really significant injury, and the pace at which the person trains themselves is really what dictates their success and the possibility of re-injury. So I believe that Marks has been working hard, and I'm not saying I don't want to see him on the field, and I just want what's best for the player, and this injury just... not necessarily career ending, but it can get very serious quickly if it's not rehabbed correctly.
Well, the ACL is very unique in that there is a mental aspect to it as far as gaining confidence in the knee, but so much more of it is a physical aspect of it, is when all the minor muscles start to fire. Now, I remember coming back with my ACL. It was almost like you had to think about making your leg do certain things without it just being second nature, and they were just happening. And I never felt like I got to the point where it was happening naturally as far as firing all the muscles until about a year, 13 months, maybe 13 and a half months. But even at that point, when things start to fire naturally, you still haven't had an entire off season to maximize your physical abilities and muscle. So, you know, even though, okay, now I've got mental confidence in it and now everything is firing, where am I at strength level compared to what I was pre-injury? I mean, that typically doesn't happen until the second year after. That's why I say that what Adrian Peterson was able to do is crazy. I mean, crazy. I mean, I guarantee you that every doctor in the country who specializes in ACL reconstructions would love to be able to do some type of study on Adrian Peterson, what he was able to accomplish, and to study his body, because it's just not normal. It's not.
Yeah, well, you can study it all you like. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean you're going to be able to replicate
it. No.
So, you know, some guys are just built that way, and apparently he is one of them. He's Jeff Logman along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars today. We're glad you're with us. Phone lines will remain open. We'll hear from Gus Bradley as well coming up. 641-1010 is the call-in line, as well as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, where we've got a bunch of those in already today. Question of the day, we simply ask you, who will the Jaguars' defensive MVP be? You can get in on Twitter, Facebook, and the phone lines and the text lines on that as well. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along. Jaguars today, Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Here's what we have coming out. Fat Tuesday tonight, Tony?
Yeah, 9 to 10.
9 to 10 for Fat Tuesdays. Okay, we launched the FanDuel Fantasy Forecast on Thursday from 2 to 3 o'clock. That'll be every Thursday, formerly the web.com fantasy forecast. Web.com's too big. They don't need to advertise locally anymore. But we love you, Web.com. Seriously, they were great for us and big supporters of the Jaguars. I do love my friends over at Web.com. But we'll look forward to that. I have two fantasy drafts left, Tony. We're in the one tonight.
Yeah.
I got one more tomorrow, and I'm finally done. As I mentioned when I was talking about FanDuel a minute ago, I may be 0-4, but I have the best 0-4 team in fantasy this year because I went all in on the suspended injured player strategy.
Yes, you did.
If they come back and give me any semblance of what I think they could be, Foster, Gurley, Gates, and Martavis Bryant join the lineup. I think I've got enough to get by. All I want to get is 2-2 out of the first month, and we'll see where we stand. But we'll.
Bad luck to you,
sir. You took Gurley?
I did take Gurley, yeah.
And you took Foster?
I did. And I also took Chris Ivory and Doug Martin. What are you shaking your head at?
Bad mistake.
Well, why is that, Mr. Fantasy Guru?
Well, I mean, I'm not a fantasy guru by any stretch because I'm in zero leagues.
Correct.
But Gurley, got a young man coming back from an ACL, playing running back, trying to go to the next level. You're stretching on that one. Arian Foster, you know, surgery on a groin for a running back. Nah, I think you're begging.
Okay, we'll find out. We'll find out, Jeffrey. We'll find out when Jeff makes
everybody
his fantasy pick.
Everybody else is watching you make that pick going, that sucker.
We'll see. We'll see. We will see. I think, look, if Arian Foster were healthy, he'd be a first-round pick in fantasy.
No doubt.
Right?
So, where'd you get him?
I got him in the late third round. Okay? If I get him back, I got Gurley in the late fifth round, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if Gurley were healthy, he'd be probably a third-round pick because there's a little sight unseen with the potential to play like a top-10 running back this year. Martavis Bryant was unstoppable.
Yeah, I'd take him all day
right?
long.
Get him, and Gates as well. Gates comes back. Gates had one of the best years of his career last year. And
I like that one.
You know, both of those
guys.
I like
the Bryant and I like the Gates, but running backs coming back from injury like that, I'd
we will find out, Jeffrey. All I need him around week five.
You're talking injuries and suspension.
Understood.
Two different categories.
Understood. Guys come back, though. You know, guys get hurt, they come back and play. You're absolutely right.
Rolling
he just
the
did
dice.
The roll the dice pantomime. That's what it is, right? That's why you get them a little bit later, because it is a roll of the dice. We'll find out. I advocate drafting, like, one of those guys.
Right.
And I reached a point where I said, the hell with this. I'm getting them all. I'm just going to see what happens when I take all of these guys, and can I still compete? Because I have Julio. I got Dez. Mm-hmm. I'm in good shape at wide receiver. I got a few guys on the bench that can tide me over. I got Tyler Eifert at tight end. A lot of people think he'd be a top 10 guy this year. That's a little bit of a guessing game.
The tight end I'm taking this year, if I was in fantasy, is Greg Olsen.
Oh, Greg Olsen. If Greg Olsen had made it back to me in round four, I would have taken him in round four. But he came off the board before I got the chance. It wasn't the right range to get Greg Olsen.
He is going to catch a ton of balls.
Oh, he should catch a ton of balls. Absolutely right.
Yeah, with their situation in Carolina last year, he had over 1,000 yards receiving, 80 something catches. I mean, this year he could go 95 catches.
What do you do with him if you're the Jags this week? What are the Jags? What's their game plan with Greg Olsen?
Double him up.
With whom?
Doesn't matter. I mean, it could be a safety, a linebacker. It could be a nickel linebacker. I mean, you give him every bit of attention that you can possibly give
him. If he is the best threat in the passing game for the other team.
He is.
Okay, and he is, right? Do you consider putting one of your best corners on him as part of a double team pack? I mean, if he's clearly the best guy.
Yeah, I mean, a nickel, you know, if Aaron Colvin, you know,
because
Greg Olsen plays in the slot a bunch, so he's going to draw coverage from Aaron Colvin. When they're in base personnel, he's going to draw the coverage of linebackers and Cyprian. You know, you put as many on him as you can.
So what do? Do you try to chip him coming off the line of scrimmage to get him off his route?
Depends on where he's at and, you know, can you do that? You know, when he's out in space, sometimes it's hard to jam him. When he's at the line of scrimmage, yeah, you can ask your defensive end to hammer him before he's kind of getting out in the route. You know, beat him up as much as you can. You know, I mean, if you look at, you know, their film so far, I mean, Cam Newton is looking his way all the time. You know, there's so many unproven guys. There's no confidence in the young wide receiver from Ohio State. What's his name? George Brown, Philly Brown, whatever
Philly Brown.
His name is. He's had drops, and you could see that Cam Newton was very, very frustrated with his drops in the preseason, and that's being kind, you know. So I would not be surprised if Cotchery is a guy that Cam Newton really wants to throw the ball to on a consistent level, but he's got a little bit of a groin issue. I don't think it's going to be a major issue. But I'm covering the tight end all day long.
You got to.
All day long.
I mean,
long.
It's one of the worst wide receiver situations in the National Football League now that you take Kelvin Benjamin out as, what was he, a 9-touchdown, just over 1,000-yard guy. As a rookie, Devin Funchess not ready to make that kind of impact right now. They've got him listed as the number 3 wideout for this football team.
Yeah, but I like him. I like Funchess from watching him on film. The other one that I like is a guy that they actually put on practice squad, was wearing number 11. I don't know his name. They put him on practice squad, and I was kind of going, why? Now, he's better than Philly Brown. He's more productive than Philly Brown. The quarterback trusts him more than Philly Brown. But it didn't happen. Would not be surprised if at some point that they elevate this young man up off of the practice squad and put him up to the active roster. I'm a big believer in that. Look, quarterbacks have to trust the weapons. That's why I think Brian Walter made this roster, because the quarterbacks here in Jacksonville trusted him. They knew that if they were going to throw him the ball, he was going to give them every opportunity at catching their balls. And so that's a positive. And Brian Walter, you can't have enough of those guys. Give me 3 of those guys, and then give me 2 guys that have, you know, the yak ability and the deep ball ability. But the other guys that don't have that, I want ones that are going to catch the ball.
Brenton Burson out of Wofford is number 11, the Carolina Panther wide receiver.
Who was here from Wofford? There was a guy that was here from Wofford. I'm trying to remember his name.
Must have been a Gene Smith guy, I'm guessing.
I think it was.
It probably was. Yeah. I mean, that might have been one of the bigger schools he drafted a player from.
Casey Redfern, the backup punter.
There you go. Look at Tyler Devitt.
Thank you.
He is crisp on the mark right there this morning.
Wofford.
All right.
Kind of places you get punters.
I guess. Maybe. Kickers, punters, what have you.
Marist, Wofford.
And apparently practice squad receivers now as well for the Carolina Panthers. The captains for the Jags, Blake Bortles, Paul Posluszny, Mercedes Lewis, Brian Anger, no surprises there, I don't think, right?
No, because, I mean, special team-wise, in a perfect world, you'd have somebody who was a core four guy who was established, you know, like a Montel Owens, like a Brant Boyer, who the Jaguars have had in the past.
Who's the most likely guy to be that? Leroy Reynolds? Is there another guy?
Yeah, when he's healthy, Leroy Reynolds. I mean, Leroy Reynolds was having a fantastic camp prior to having the MCL. I mean, he was really good. He was consistent. He was looking faster than he'd ever looked. You know, you can always tell that certain guys just dig it. You know, I mean, by the speed at which they play on special teams and the way that they're aggressive. And you could tell that Leroy Reynolds loves special teams and just flat out digs it. I mean, he was a guy that I think a candidate in the future as a special teams captain. I think Brian Anger was more of a thing by default. Well, Josh Gobe's gone. We've got a new kicker. We don't really have anybody who's a, you know, prove it, been there, core four guy. Let's just name Brian Anger.
There you go. All right. Well, good for Brian Anger. You know what? It's not Brian Anger's fault he got taken in the third round.
No, and you know, I think everybody in Jacksonville's past that. I mean, I don't look at him and say, boy, what a waste.
I hope they didn't hold it against him. I think they held it against the previous GM.
And rightly so. I mean, but I will tell you that Brian Anger needs to take a step up for this team. And I thought that he took some steps forward at the Redskins game.
In what area particularly? Like,
when you're backed up, don't give me a shank. Give me a crushing ball. When you're at the 50, don't give me a crushing kick.
Right.
Okay, give me one of those ones that's going to drop the ball. He needs to be better at placing the ball inside the 10, inside the 20, and he needs to do a better job of displaying the leg strength that we all hear everybody talking about, how he's got this nickname, you know, where when he hits the ball, you go, wow, about time that he gets a little consistent and becomes a weapon for this team. Because I think in the past, it's almost been a little bit of a tease factor. Okay, well, we see it, but now we don't see it when we need to see it. Now we need to see it when we need it.
All right, still to come, we'll have Gus Bradley's first thoughts of the week on the Jaguars game week, taking on the Carolina Panthers on Sunday. That's to come. We've got this date in football history and the drive around the NFL. And, ooh, there are some juicy stories out there in the drive around the NFL for sure. With Jeff Loggeman and Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. In 1991 on this date, Buffalo Bill Jim Kelly passed for 6 touchdowns in a Buffalo 52-34 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Also on this date in 2002, rookie quarterback David Carr threw a pair of touchdown passes as the Houston Texans defeated the Dallas Cowboys 19-10, becoming only the second NFL expansion team to win their inaugural game. Who was the first? Anybody? 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 It'd be a blind guess in the dark, wouldn't it? Minnesota Vikings, 1961. No. Oh, we all knew that. Birthdays for this date, some significant ones, including Len Varney, 7-time Pro Bowler, 2-time first-team All-Pro, Hall of Fame inductee in 1992 as a Detroit Lion defensive back. He is 70 today. L.C. Greenwood turned 69 today in a career spent entirely with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Again, 6-time Pro Bowler here and a 2-time first-team All-Pro. Other notables, 1974, Monty Toomer born. He turns 41 today. Jaguar for a little while. Aurelius Ben is 27 years old today, born in 1988. Oh, boy. The guy just, you thought he was going to make the Eagles as the third quarterback, but apparently he just turned out to just not be good enough for Chip Kelly. Matt Barkley was born today. What, you thought I was going to say something else? 1990, Matt Barkley turns 25. Tyler Eifert, also 25 today, the Bengal tight end. And Avery Jones, Jacksonville Jaguar defensive tackle, turns 24 years young today. This date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. For your home, for your business, repairs, re-roofs, one call you need to make. 287-7756 for First Coast Roofing. License number CCC056797. That is this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jason Pierre-Paul and the New York Giants met for the first time yesterday since JPP injured his hand in a July 4th fireworks accident. A source said that Pierre-Paul handed over all of his medical records as well as a tape of him working out after the incident. One anonymous team source said JPP could play this week and probably would if it were up to him, but probably won't be out there on Sunday night against the Dallas Cowboys. Seattle Seahawks safety Cam Chancellor, at least for now, continues his holdout while trying to get a new contract done. Chancellor would be potentially forfeiting just over $280,000 for each game he decides to hold out if it gets into the regular season. And I don't even know where to start. With the Outside the Lines report that came out this morning regarding the New England Patriots going back to Spygate and how it may have affected
going back to 2000.
Going on with the Flategate and the investigation, quote unquote, by the league into Spygate and how they handled the whole thing. In case you haven't heard all the details this morning, some of them that have come out include that when Spygate went down, basically the NFL sent investigators to the Patriots stadium. They found evidence of over 40 games that have been taped, reviewed,
40
over the course of the last 7 years, including hand detailed notes about the Pittsburgh Steelers from the 2002 AFC Championship game, that Goodell ordered all of that to be destroyed on the spot. So no one really knows what was actually there or the extent to which the New England Patriots were cheating. Of course, the Patriots have said the entire time that it didn't help them, you know, any of the cheating that they were doing, but it continues.
So they just kept doing it for 7 years.
Right. It continues to go deeper and deeper, and it's like a mob movie, basically reading what Outside the Lines has and the level to which the Patriots would go to try to gain any advantage on a Sunday.
According to the report, among other things, they would send low-level staffers into the opposing team's locker room during stretching and warm-ups to steal their play sheets or steal anything they could find and bring it back. And they would do the same thing in their hotels.
Yes.
And we've all heard, you know, the stories about the electronic communications going out quite frequently in New England over this period of time. And look, to me, I mean, it was fishy at the time that they would destroy all the evidence right away. I mean, if there's nothing there, why wouldn't you show it? And honestly, Jeff, it sounds to me like if it was as scandalous what they found as is suggested, Roger Goodell looked at it and said, we got a 3-time Super Bowl champion here, and all of these are going to look like it's the WWE. It's all going to look like a farce, that none of it's real, that the outcomes are now called into question, and better to bury evidence that they cheated their way to all these titles than to open up the can of worms that the NFL's not on the up and up.
I think we had this conversation a while ago, and we were talking about what the penalties should be. You know, I thought that the penalties for Tom Brady should have been, you know, 4 games minimum. I still believe that it should have been four games. I'm glad it's behind us now, you know, and that we can move forward, but I still think that it should have stuck with four games, even though some of the evidence in that case. But I still believe this to this day, that was a result, the decision process in that was a result of past transgressions with the Patriots. And that I know there were some reports now that this was kind of a makeup call from the Spygate stuff. Look, I know that there's a lot of people around the league, not anybody that I'd be willing to name names or anything, but, I mean, there's been a lot of conversation over the last number of years that what had happened before was grossly understated.
With the Spygate stuff.
Yes.
Yes, and I would, based on everything, I don't see anything that has contradicted that other than the word of the Patriots themselves.
Well, and I get what the league was trying to do. You just you never want to give the impression that or have anything that's going to taint the league.
Right.
Or taint the what the outcomes have happened to be tainted after the fact. You know, but sooner or later, and what was very disappointing going back to the Spygate stuff was that, you know, all this evidence supposedly never was shown. Why?
Right.
Why?
Well, honestly, the moral that, I don't know if it's the intended moral, I'm sure it's not, but the moral is cheat, because if you win, they're not going to go back and do anything about it, right? I mean, they may fine you, but they're not taking your Super Bowl trophy. They're not going to, everyone's afraid to say they're not the legitimate champs. Oh, no, well, they earned it on the field. They earned it on the field. But how did they earn it on the field? What extra advantages that they had outside the rules did they employ to earn it on the field?
Yeah, and there are anonymous sources that are basically saying that's what Belichick was telling them. Like, when he was trying to set up this spying ring, this cheating ring, he was telling them, the NFL's lazy. Like, when everything is said and done, they're not going to want to get us. They're not going to want to do anything about it. They're going to want to just set it to the side and move on from whatever we happen to accomplish with this entire thing, which is why he set it up in the first place. And I know a lot of people are saying, look, if they shut down Spygate and all this stuff in 2007, they've been ultra successful since then, too. Yeah, but maybe Bill Belichick isn't a head coach. You know, maybe he's not even in the league right now if he fails in New England, which maybe he should have. If he was put on a level playing field.
Loser at that point.
Right. Time. I mean, you just don't know. As great as Bill Belichick is perceived to be, maybe he's not even in the league if he's not a way to get away with this cheating scandal.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions, you know, and there's certainly when you have, you know, the old saying is, well, where there's smoke, there's fire. Well, there's been a lot of smoke around the Patriots over the last number of years about what they were doing to gain competitive advantages. And I'm just a believer that the culture that he has created in New England, in Foxborough, is one that kind of stuff is okay. You know, the old saying of, you know, if you're not cheating, I guess kind of applies in Foxborough. And I know that ESPN is going after him pretty hard right now. But I think that there are certain things to this story that are certainly and positively truthful.
Now, that's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like.
ESPN doesn't roll with something like this.
Outside the Lines doesn't usually roll with something like this. I mean, it's one thing if you're on first
take. Not to this level.
Right. And, you know, they're pretty much the ones who got the whole Spygate ball rolling, as I recall, back in 2007 as well.
It'll be interesting to watch.
Nothing's going to come of it because the NFL doesn't want it to come. There's nothing good. First of all, the evidence is destroyed, right? And Goodell's going to say, that's not true. I mean, how do you prove
this,
it?
Sure. This may be, and I'm not talking the Deflategate, but all of this that's now coming out, because that was all, you know, if you talk about Spygate and Deflategate and Bountygate, you know, these things were under Roger Goodell's watch.
Yeah, but you know what? Roger's going to be just like the Patriots. They're not going to take away those $30 million bonuses they've been giving him those last few years.
Yeah, but you know what, Mike? I mean, sooner or later, there has to be a fall guy to allow the league to move on.
Understood. But if Roger Goodell becomes that fall guy, Jeff, he walks away with, I don't know, what, approaching $250 million?
Well, I mean, whatever it may be, I mean, it doesn't really matter, but it's important. The important thing
is just,
well, I mean, it matters to him, but I mean, it doesn't matter in the whole grand spectrum of things here when it comes to making sure that the league has an integrity level that's unparalleled, because it's the most popular sport, and in order for that to continue, you've got to have integrity. And there has to be a fall guy if something comes out, and this is all, you know, legitimized. With those three things, that's not a good track record for Roger Goodell. Look, I'm a big Roger Goodell fan. I thought when he came into the league, his willingness to uphold the integrity of the game and the brand and to hold players to a certain level of accountability, I thought was absolutely what the league needed at that point. And I think that he has certainly mishandled some things, and I think he may end up paying dearly for it.
All right, we're going to take a break here so we can clean the palate and come back with some Jaguar talk. I got some questions on Twitter and text for you, Jeff, and we'll hear from Gus Bradley as well coming up. And for our texter, Henry, who's been texting, asking us some questions about the pride of the Jaguars, the answer is no, Henry. It is incorrect, despite your well-placed sources, whoever they may be. We'll get to some of those questions for Jeff Loggeman coming up momentarily. It's Jaguars Today. Tuesday is brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I think that the guys we felt like we had were the best available. You know, I think we felt good about that. The dilemma for us right now is just figuring out the reps, you know, in a game. You know, how many does Chris Clemons get, Chris Smith, Ryan? You know, how do we spread out these reps at the Leo spot? That's what we just need to take a look at.
There you go, Gus Bradley talking about not signing a free agent pass rusher. You know why? Usually not too many guys that get whacked, right, that have any pass rush ability. Let me ask you one, and we're going to hear from Gus, and then we'll get to the string of Twitter and text questions for you here. This one dovetails with it. Michael Castle said, what happened with Cap Caffey? No one picked him up and no practice squad.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with Cap Caffey. He's a little bit undersized. They were looking for somebody to be able to play first and second down at the Leo spot. And because they want to allow Chris Clemons to be that when they get to their sub package. And Cap Cappy's strength is not first and second down and holding the point from that Leo position. So that's kind of why they chose Chris Smith. But I'm kind of with the person there that made that comment about Cap Cappy. I mean, he did some things. He actually looked better down the stretch. I thought he got a lot better as the preseason wore on. You could probably make a case that Cap Cappy over Chris Smith, but it's the desire to have a Leo on first and second down that made that decision for this team.
But it did surprise me, at least, that he didn't make the practice squad. As I talked about on the post game last week, just developmental pass rush. I mean, you don't have a whole lot of pass rush on this football team. Why not? You have a young guy who flashed, and all he can do is beat the guys that he's playing against.
I thought he should have been on practice squad.
I thought so, too. It surprised me that he wasn't. Here's Gus Bradley yesterday talking about this team, the Jaguars' weekly schedule this week.
Good to get back there. We got game Friday and Saturday off. Brought the players back yesterday. Had a workout in the weight room. We ran them. And then today, a bonus Monday. Still incorporated some ones versus ones, twos versus twos. But we did have a period, just an introduction of Carolina. As the week goes on, we'll see more and more emphasis starting Wednesday. Players have a day off on tomorrow. And it'll be like a normal week for us.
And again, that was comments yesterday, so obviously players' day off on Tuesday. Just a standard fare there?
Yeah, I mean, nothing big there. I mean, it's pretty standard procedure. But going back to Cap Cappy, I think the one reason why that he may not be on practice squad is that, you know, you also want to be able to have positions that are balanced for practice. And they got a ton of Leos already on the roster. So, I mean, they're not only is practice squad developmental, but it's what it is, literally, practice squad. To be able to practice with guys at every different position without having to tax your starters in practice and have them take show team reps, etc.
We've talked a little bit today already about some of the injuries this team is going to be taking into week one. None of them long-term injuries, but a bunch of guys that won't be available in the short term. Gus Bradley was asked about the depth of this roster dealing with those injuries going into the season.
We could probably name a couple of inactives right now and be, you know, or quite a few of them, I guess. You know, I think that we felt with the depth of our team, where some of those injuries are and the depth that we have on our team, we'll be in good shape. We'll be in good shape. And now it just causes us, you know, to get guys ready at multiple positions possibly.
By the way, these cuts come courtesy of Jaguars.com. We appreciate our friends with Jags.com sharing this audio with us here so we can bring it to you. Jeff, I know that Dave Caldwell said, kind of 50-50 proposition for Marquise Lee. At this point, you expect it?
No.
Right?
No. And here's the thing. When he's back, what do you expect?
A month of getting up to speed?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know... I don't know if you saw Marquise Lee's reaction to the white lion comments that Greg Olsen had, because Marquise Lee was interviewed.
Albino Rocker, Tiger.
Or
yeah.
Albino Tiger, whatever. It was awesome. First of all, I'm sure that, you know, as a staff, you're not thrilled that, you know, the Albino Tiger reference was used, because it, you know, it can be taken the wrong way, and it can be viewed as being critical of the player. But, I mean, Greg Olsen nailed it. I mean, he nailed it. And Marquise Lee wasn't offended by it. In fact, Marquise Lee was kind of laughing about it, saying, well, he's dead on the money.
Yeah.
And it's true. You know, so I think you just got to go about your business, assuming that Marquise Lee's not even there. He's not going to be available. And when he is available, great, fine and dandy. But, you know, going back to the injuries, you know, there were some decisions that were made, and this roster has the ability to be in flux as you go into the early part of the season. Remember, vested veterans are the only ones that are guaranteed their salary when they're on the roster of week one. And you have to be a, you know, 4 years or more or whatever it is to be.
And you can only do
veteran.
That one time in your career.
Well, that's as far as taking the pay.
Taking the pay.
But you can cut a non-vested veteran without having an obligation to continue to pay his salary for the remainder of the year. So a guy like Josh Evans, third year, you know, would Josh Evans have been on this roster if Craig Lawson doesn't hurt his ankle at Washington? Maybe not. But now Josh Evans has to continue to earn his roster spot in the early part of the season, because once Craig Lawson, who is now on practice squad, is available to practice and is available to play, what would happen to Josh Evans? They can interchange the two of them.
Sure.
Without any final financial obligation. And it's no different for the Armbristers or the Corey Grants, these rookies that made the team. You made the team for that day. You made the team so far Monday and Tuesday. Now Wednesday, you will get a check. If you're on the team, I think, is on Wednesday, you get your check for that week. But they could still cut you on Thursday morning and bring somebody else up onto the active roster
right.
on Thursday. And then that player gets paid too. It's kind of double dipping. But that's all part of the rules that you can do that. But, you know, so for all these young players, that some of them think that they have accomplished something. You have not accomplished anything yet, because your job depends on your performance on a weekly basis and you getting a check. Because if they decide, Corey Grant, you didn't look good last week, we're going to cut you. They can cut you. They don't have to pay you for the remainder of the season. They can bring somebody else on. And a lot of fans don't understand that part of the business. And that young players can get cut, and they have nothing guaranteed to them in the future at all. Period. Nothing. And then bring in another guy. Take his place. It's crazy.
That's life in the NFL.
It's the way it is.
You mentioned earlier that you thought George was probably going to make this team at the linebacker spot, winds up getting cut. But the rookie, Thurston Armbrister, does make the team. Gus Bradley talked about him making the roster yesterday.
Well, first of all, we started him at Mike. And, you know, that's generally the toughest position on the defense as far as for the linebackers. You're making all the calls. You're running the whole defense. And we felt like that's the same thing with Jeremiah and Thurston, was to get them reps at Mike and see how they could handle it. Once they kind of get a feel for that, now give him another position and see how that goes. And he went to Otto and did really a nice job. And we felt like it gave him the flexibility to play Mike and Otto for us on first and second down and in nickel. His length, I think, showed up for us. We really like that part of his game. I know we're a heavier zone drop team, and a guy that has length and can utilize it helps us.
All right, one more from Gus Bradley here, just talking about undrafted rookies, guys like Corey Grant, Nick Marshall making this football team.
You know, they have certain traits, like Nick, tremendous ball skills. He is raw out there as a fifth corner, but we felt like the fifth corner's got to be a guy that can play special teams, and we're willing to work with him to develop him. With Corey, it's his speed, you know, his ability to, I think, to offer some stuff on special teams, and then situational, you know, and on offense.
Yes.
Do we got a live game going on
yes,
in the background?
Yes, we do. There was a live game going on in the hallway when Gus was speaking yesterday. So that's what happened with that. Now you know. the rest of the story. Log, you got this one from David J., at David J. 28-2002. For Jeff, will the top three running backs see equal touches? Will it be situational touches for Denard and Toby? This sounds to me, Tony, suspiciously like a fantasy football question. Nonetheless, what do you think of the touch distribution in the backfield?
Interesting, and to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know the answer. I suspect it will go that Denard and T.J. Yeldon will probably get equal carries, and then Toby will get equal carries. I think it's going to be about third, third, third to start the season. Now, if all of a sudden, you know, Toby Gerhardt is looking like John Riggins, Toby's going to get a few more carries and maybe equal carries in a ball game. And I think that Kelly Skipper, who is a young running backs coach, not young, but I mean he's young here to Jacksonville, has done a very good job at managing backfields before he did it in Oakland. I think he'll do a good job. And look, if one guy gets hot, let him roll. But Toby will be the short yardage back, third down back. Will also get some carries in first and second down in the power gap scheme. And then they're going to try to get Denard in space. Corey Grant, they probably will have a package for him to where he has limited playbook, you know, so to speak, to where he can learn a certain number of packages to where they can find a way to get him the ball in space. Because right now, he's the most explosive offensive player right now. I mean, if you evaluated the preseason and said, okay, ignore everything that happened in the past. Let me evaluate the preseason. Let's see who's the guy. And Corey Grant. He's the most explosive guy. So I think everybody's going to get something. But, I mean, exactly what percentages? I mean,
I think ultimately what Dave Caldwell told me last week was the goal is to have it be kind of a 60-40 Yeldon, Denard Robinson. And that doesn't mean every week it's going to be along that. But he said about 15.
Yeah, but 60-40 of what?
Of whatever the pie is.
Yeah, see, that's not the whole pie. I mean,
well, but
is it first and second down pie? Is it third down pie?
Let me explain to you. In terms of the main.
To be honest with you, Mike, I don't even think they know.
But I'm telling you what he said. He said their goal is to do 15 touches, carries for Yeldon, about 10 for Denard, and then Toby comes in as your short yardage guy.
Okay, what about Corey Grant?
What about him? I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think that they know yet. I think they have an idea, but I think that this is going to be learning on the go. And I think it should be learning on the go.
I'm sure it will be.
Because I think in a perfect world, you would have liked to have had Corey Grant on your practice squad, but when all of a sudden he's ripping off 40-yarders in the preseason, it's kind of hard to hide a guy who's ripping off 40-yarders and is averaging 30 yards a kick return. You know, so he's going to be active on game day probably as a kick returner and also as a running back. You know, so are you not going to find many touches
in the running game?
I don't know if it's necessarily the running game, but I think in the passing game, the ability to get him in space and take advantage of that speed, absolutely. I think that it would be a shame if they didn't utilize his speed in a capacity on offense.
Speaking of the passing game, a question on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Why do you think that the Jags didn't pursue James Jones when he was let go by the Giants last week?
Well, I think that they did early in the process going back to the offseason. They were looking at bringing in, you know, veteran guy to kind of mentor that group. But, you know, you got to have interest on both sides.
Yep.
You know, it's got to happen both ways. And to be honest with you, I think that they had talked with James Jones, and I don't know if the interest was returned by James Jones. And who knows? Maybe the Jaguars did go and contact James Jones' agent.
And he said, hey, I can go play with Aaron Rodgers.
But are you going to compete with the ability to go back to Aaron Rodgers? No way.
Guy who you caught 10 touchdowns from in a season before.
I mean, you might be able to compete if you offered him, you know, an obscene amount of money.
Sure.
But are you going to do that for a guy that doesn't know your system that's going to come in here?
Going to come in and
will
he contribute on special teams?
No.
A lot of questions.
And by the way,
he
went to New York, which was a place where he had worked with the offensive coordinator before. I mean, he was comfortable in what he was going to be asked to do in New York, not have to learn anything new. Now he gets cut. It seems likely Green Bay would be the destination for him.
All right, got this one from Jaguars 101. Okay, please define the Mike and Otto and other linebacker positions. We assume, you know, we talk so much about these things that everybody knows. Obviously, the Mike's the middle linebacker. The Will is the weak side. The Sam is the strong side. Your traditional three linebacker and a 4-3 alignment. For folks, you know, give your best definition of the Otto and the responsibilities Dan Scooter's going to have here.
Well, the Otto is kind of a Sam-Will hybrid. And when you're talking about S and W. S, strong side. W for Will, weak side. M, Mike, middle. Okay. Football coaches are not geniuses, so you got to remember a lot of the first letters mean something to the terminology. The Otto is a hybrid of a Sam and a Will. And what they have done is designed that the Otto is going to be in the position that he would have the most opportunities at blitzing more in certain design of the defenses. So the Otto could be, in reality, the Will linebacker on a traditional 4-3 defense in certain alignments. But he would be the guy that would be blitzing for the most part. So it's just it's a different terminology, just like Leo. The San Francisco 49ers had a Leo for years. The Leo isn't some new invention that Gus Bradley and Pete Carroll designed in Seattle. Pete Carroll coached the 49ers defense where the Leo was called the Elephant. It's the same thing. Elephant. E-L. E is for end, defensive end. L is for linebacker. It's a hybrid position. And when Pete Carroll goes to Seattle, L-E, you're just flipping. Linebacker, end, instead of and linebacker. It's just a hybrid position.
Who was that? Julian Peterson? Was that there? Did he play that for them at some point?
For the Elephant?
Yeah. Who was it?
I mean, you go all the way back to Charles Haley.
I'm trying to think like when Carroll was. I guess he might have been there at that time. I don't know what the time frame when he was with the 49ers off the top of my head. He coached the Jets in the 90s.
I know that in free agency in 95, I was on a visit with Pete in San Francisco, and my choices were New York, San Francisco, Jacksonville, and I came here.
Gotcha, and we're glad you did. Jeff Lagerman here with us every Tuesday. Have you ever gone noodling?
No, I have not. I prefer hook and line.
Okay, what is noodling?
Catfish noodling.
Oh, is that where you just go in and grab them with your bare hands?
Yeah, you stick your hand in their mouth.
Yeah.
And you bite your hand, you pull them out. And
yeah,
you
I've seen that on the some of those... I believe they call them redneck shows, Tony, on the television from time to time. Those catfish are pretty big.
I like to not to refer to that as redneck shows.
Is that right?
I like to refer to that as culturally enhanced shows.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right, well, take it from the redneck in the room. It's culturally enhanced television. He's Jeff Lagerman. That's Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. We're glad you're with us. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Today we ask you our question of the day. Who do you think the Jags defensive MVP will be? We'll kick around the candidates when we return and read some of your responses as well on the text and tweet lines. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Happy game week. Good to have Loggy in on Tuesdays. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars Today. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. On the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, two thumbs up to Fat Tony.
Hey!
For the Episcopal Eagles play-by-play. Well done, go Eagles. I did not hear it. How did you feel it went, your debut on Friday?
I had a lot of fun.
Yeah?
And it'll get better from here. That's what I can promise you. But I had a lot of fun. The Eagles come out with the victory, 33-7. It's my first foray into the play-by-play thing, so... looking forward to doing that for the rest of the season and hopefully for the next handful of years. But it was a blast just being out there and calling some high school football.
Franchi going to hand the torch to you one day? Or a few years down the road?
Is it going to be a little seasoning.
Smooth transition?
You
got a few years. That's what I'm saying.
A little bit of seasoning before we start talking about the Jaguars play-by-play.
You got to start somewhere. You know the team. You're getting the play-by-play chops. And if you had told me that it's all downhill from here, I would have been disappointed. Of course it's going to get better.
Oh, yeah.
The way you go. So congrats on that. Congrats to Agent Gibbs. Yesterday, I didn't get to see. I saw him on Facebook. He had a picture of himself with the CW microphone, said, hey, I'm going to make my debut with the Suns today, calling the game. He was going to be part of the, I guess he was the on-field reporter for the Suns. And I didn't get a chance to tune in until right at the end. It might have been Sunday, I think it was, not yesterday. And they had technical difficulties, wiped out his post-game interview, but I hope he had some on-camera opportunities because I didn't see the game. But congrats to him for getting that gig. That's pretty cool and nice to see the young talent starting to rise to the top here at 1010XL. That's what we do. Today, we asked you about defensive MVP, fan feedback spotlight. Jeff, who would be your top candidate or three?
Telvin Smith,
That is a popular suggestion today.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, he's got great talent, great speed, makes plays all over the field. He's going to be a three-down linebacker. Besides that, you know, I don't know.
Let me ask you, is it crazy to say a guy like Odrick, who's going to come in, who's not going to put up gaudy stats, but his role and, you know, and being a veteran, maybe provide you a little pass rush.
Is it crazy to say? You paid him like $8 million
a year.
I know,
I understand that, but he's not, I don't think he's the first guy, because that position is not a playmaking position. And usually when you think of most valuable,
but that's
people
not the
are
only position he's
going to
be
stats.
Playing, though, because I mean, he's going to be a strong side end. When they go to sub, he's going to be on the inside, and he's going to have the ability to make plays. But I think his performance is critical to this defense of taking the step that they need to take, because, you know, last year they were just kind of okay against the run. They need to become dominant against the run so that they can have the best down distances to allow, you know, a pass rush that has some question marks and some coverage that has some question marks to be able to be at its best. And so I think that he is one of the most critical parts to this defense and their level of play this year.
Tony, who's your one of your top candidates, other than guys we just mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, Aaron Colvin's a guy, because I think he is the best corner on the team that could certainly be that guy. Honestly, I think that I want the MVP to be Cyprian, right? Like, I don't know if I think he's going to be the defensive MVP, but I would love to see a safety in the middle of this field creating turnovers, creating big plays, and to get to the end of the year and look back and say these 8 or 10 plays impacted games that Jonathan Cyprian made. I'm not sure that I think he's going to be that guy for them this year, but I would love for him to be the answer when everything is said and done.
I wish that Jonathan Cyprian would go and watch film of who we'll see this week in Charles Tillman. Charles Tillman, 13 years in the National Football League, played with the Bears for a long time. I think he might have the most caused fumbles in NFL history, certainly for a defensive back. The guy has a tremendous knack for punching the ball out, knocking the ball out. He's also got great ball skills. I wish that Cyprian would watch him. Maybe he has. I don't know. But I think every defensive back for the Jaguars could learn a lot by watching Charles Tillman, the history of Charles Tillman, and while watching him play in the game this weekend.
Tony, what did we get today on the fan feedback spotlight asking him about defensive MVP?
Here's what we got from Chris, easily Telvin Smith, hashtag Pro Bowl. From Dusty, Colvin is going to break out this year, hashtag Game Week, hashtag Albino Tiger Jersey coming soon. From Irish Jag, Telvin. From Jason, Chris Smith, he will get off to a quick start with 6 sacks this week against Michael Oher. From Daniel, I will go with Telvin Smith due to his playmaking abilities and his growth in leadership. From Eric, Ryan Davis, why not? We'll have to step up, but I think he can do it. From Cristiano, Aaron Colvin. From David, I like Telvin Smith with Ryan Davis as my sleeper. From Brandon, Telvin will be the MVP, but I digest. From Demetrius.
that's from the post game the other night. You missed it on the post game. Long story.
From Demetrius, James Sample, despite being a rookie with limited snaps, I see a potential immediate impact from him. And from Desert Duval, Aaron Colvin, hashtag Game Week.
On Facebook, just oodles of votes for Telvin Smith. But interestingly enough, 2 votes for a guy with the initials TB. Any guesses? Not Tony Brackens. Here's a sample. Tony Boselli, as he defends our left tackle all season long. Oh, where's the rim shot on that one? Defensive MVP for your Jacksonville.
You're not
going to
let
Jaguars.
That go, are you?
I didn't write it. I just read it.
Yeah, but you're reading.
I just elected to read that one from Derek Stewart. Thank you, Derek. And you weren't the only one who voted that way either. All right, moving along. That was Tommy Blair with the other vote for Boselli.
There's a lot of jokal snark out there.
There's some star. It's a star. Hey,
what was the question we asked last week? It was some question where it shouldn't involve Jokel at all, but that's the answer. Like, the first 5 answers were Jokel.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was either. And it was, we weren't angling for it.
No.
It just happens, but it's not me. It's not just me, put it that way. Let's get a couple calls in under the wire here with Jeff Lagerman. Jim, thanks for holding on. You're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
First thing, you took your shot earlier, so I'll take one too. Now it's time to change the name. It's no longer Even If He's Released to When He's Released, okay? We're just going to leave it at that. But the second thing is, for Jeff, every good defense has a space eater in the middle. Who's going to be our big tub of goo in our middle of the line this year?
Well, I mean, I just got done talking about Jared Odrick. He needs to be one of those guys. I mean, Roy Miller, that's kind of his role. Avery Jones, I think, at times last year when he played for the injured Roy Miller, was just as good as Roy Miller. I mean, I think that they have the potential to have some guys that up front that are going to allow these linebackers to play really well against the run game. My biggest concern is that what happens after that? You know, who's going to be the pass rush guy? And that's one of the reasons why they drafted Dante Fowler.
You
know,
right.
And why they kept Chris Clemons around, because that's, you know, that's a premium trait to have on your defense.
Yeah, on the Boston's Restaurant Sports Bar text line, should have signed Cappy, fan favorite, great young player. You passed up on talent.
Fan favorite?
Let me finish. I hear you. Fan favorite, great young player. You passed up on talent after almost a decade of losing seasons, ? Better be right or you're on the hot seat. Took a Gator defensive end instead of the best wide receiver in the draft. Sure enough, kid has glass bones and paper skin. Was that the problem with Derek Harvey? Had glass bones and paper skin, or is he just not any good?
And by the way, for everyone who was saying the biggest question mark for this team coming into the season is pass rush, you feel pretty good about the offense, right?
That's why
your biggest question is pass rush, and now you're complaining that they selected a pass rusher? Doesn't make much sense.
Let me get Daniel on board here at 641-1010. Daniel, you get last shot at it on Jaguars today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Jeff, if you were designing a defense to fit this personnel, to fit what we have, would you really for 2 years keep insisting on trying to do a single high safety scheme with a weak pass rush and no established free safety? It just doesn't make sense why we keep doing this when we don't have the parts that fit that scheme.
Well, I mean, you could argue that, you know, the alternative is to play, you know, a two deep safety defense, and then you still don't have, you know, because what you're basically saying is with a one deep safety, okay, we don't have a free. Well, if you play too deep, you really need two frees. So the alternative is what it is. Look, you know, I think schematically, I think this defense is fine. I think it's, in fact, in certain cases, it's very simple, and that's good. I think it's easy when you have injuries to where you can replace parts in it. But I think schematically, I would not suggest them changing anything. The one thing that I will say that I do like with the defenses run, like last week against the Washington Redskins, against the Detroit Lions, those teams run a wide nine look to where you have not just one guy in a great position to bring pressure and create havoc off the edge, which is the Leo, and that the wide nine has two guys on the outside that can create havoc and cause pressure.
They stretch the defensive ends out I'm trying, for people who don't know what wide nine is.
Yeah, wide nine is
create
angles. Take your defensive end and okay, if there's no tight end, he's wide outside the tackle, like Chris Clemons and the Leo typically is lined up. On the other side, if there's a tight end, that defensive end is kicked outside the tight end, and he's got a great advantage in pass rush. But it also stresses the defense, and particularly the linebacking core, when you do run a wide nine.
Yeah, because you can run it right at that
formation,
right?
I think that there is an application to a wide nine, and that having that ability to add that to this defense would be nice. But just like going back to playing too deep, you know, you'd like to have two safeties that can play in space. You also need to have two guys that have Leo traits. And right now, you really don't have one, with the exception of Chris Clemons, but he's a situational guy.
Gotcha.
So the wide nine, would it work? No. But schematically, I think at some point I'd love to see it here.
All right, we got to wrap it up. Tony, I'll make our official predictions on the season later in the week. Do you have one? Are you ready for that, like where you're at with the record-wise?
As far as this game
The season-wise, both.
I'm going to stick with what I said, and that's 7 wins. You know, and I think it could fall 1 short. I think it could go 1 over the top, but I think that's a modest expectation. But the more I see of Blake Bortles, the more I want to hedge that up, but I'm going to stick to what I said at the very beginning, and that's 7.
All right, what about this week?
I think it's a winnable game. You know, Cam Newton's got some serious weapons questions on offense. The running game looks okay for the Carolina Panthers. I think that offensive line is a little bit in flux. Their defense has got some playmakers now. I think Blake Bortles has got to be careful with the ball, with Charles Tillman floating around in the backfield. And by the way, 42 career forced fumbles for Charles Tillman. In his 12 years so far, now in his 13th year.
He's been a playmaker his entire career, and the last few years it's just been a matter he couldn't stay healthy.
Carolina is not world beaters. Yes, they were in the playoffs last year, but they did so with a substandard record in a division that was just bad. So I think that this is a winnable game. I'm not saying that they should win, because I don't think you ever use that terminology in this league unless you're the Green Bay Packers with Aaron Rodgers playing against a bad football team or a struggling football team like we had here the last 2 years with a lot of young players playing.
All right, that's going to do it for us, Loggy. Good to see you, brother. We'll talk to you on the pregame coming up. What do you have coming up this week? I know you got the Gus Bradley show. You got Jaguars Thursday. What else am I missing?
We have the debut of Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com, which will be on Friday. And then to backtrack one day, we have the Gus Bradley show Thursday night at 6 o'clock. And then Jaguars Thursday at 7 o'clock, the outdoor show on Saturday. And then Jaguars.com pregame show. Pre-game show on Channel 4, and am I missing anything? And then, of course, the game broadcast.
Game broadcast. Yeah. That'll be good, too. On 1010XL, 92.5 FM Logs. Good to see you, brother.
Thank you, man.
There he goes. Tony, tonight, Fat Tony Show, 9 o'clock. You will be given no quarter on that 90-second clock while we're drafting the second Jaguars Today Fantasy League tonight.
I got to figure all that out.
Yes. Tyler Devitt just talking smack to me on Instant Messenger about tonight's draft. Bring it, Devitt. All right? Bring it. Maybe I'll let you draft one of those suspended players tonight.
I hope it goes as quickly tonight.
Man, last night was epic. It was fantastic. Fantastic. An hour and 15. All right, that does it for us. Thanks to Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. For Jeff Loggeman, for Fat Tony, and for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato. I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping it up. XL Primetime next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And speaking of fantasy football, boy, you're thinking, oh, it's too late. Can I get in the league? Oh, you know what? You can always get in the league. You can get in the league every day, every week. You can get in multiple leagues, and it's so easy to do now at FanDuel.com. They have simplified fantasy football. They made it more fun by they've taken the injury factor out of it, the suspension factor out of it, the lack of performance. Just bring those guys out of your lineup. Pick a whole new team next week. Go to FanDuel.com/Mike. And when you do, when you sign up for the first time, whatever you deposit, up to $200, FanDuel's going to match it dollar for dollar. You can play an hour head-to-head league at FanDuel.com/Mike. And for $5, you got a chance to win $200 in any given week. Go head-to-head with Tony and I and prove your fantasy football prowess. No more injuries wrecking season-long leagues. It's FanDuel.com, where you play weekly with a salary cap format. You think you know the league. You think you know fantasy football. Prove it. FanDuel.com/Mike to get in our head-to-head listener league, or go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone, put in promo code Mike, get on board with FanDuel.com.
Now Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!